League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, this podcast contains Heath Enright.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Sharia Law and Order, Sinful Victims Unit. In the Islamic justice system, female victims of sexually based offenses are considered especially culpable. The dedicated detectives who investigate these vicious women are an elite squad known as the Sinful Victims Unit. These are their stories. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
What happens to homosexuals? You go into the, I don't want to get graphic, that guy on Duck Dynasty got graphic and it got a little disgusting. But when you see what they do, it's not very pretty.
This is Matt from Chicago, and since I received my Scathing Atheist iPhone case from CafePress.com, I've had sex with 8 different women, and one of them was willing. But I'm not here just to make sure that Heath hits his rape joke quota for the show. I'm here to say that we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men. Fuck you. Yeah.
It's Thursday.
It's February 20th.
And now that Paul Walker's dead, his roles will be played by Aaron Paul, a.k.a. The Miracle on Ice.
I'm No Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright. And from the city that never sleeps, New York, New York.
And the city that never flosses, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, we'll open with an intricate series of bullet points.
We'll get through a snake handling story with no masturbation jokes.
And Jay Novella joins us to share non-culinary advice for atheist parents.
Oh, damn. But first, the diatribe. I was accused in an email exchange the other day of hating religious people. And I was about to email back that I don't hate religious people, I hate religion. But I stopped myself because I didn't want to be dishonest. I do hate religious people. And it's not because they're religious. It's because they're people. Think about the copious amounts of ass that people suck. I hate most of them. I'd guess about 80% of the people I hate are religious, and 2% of them are atheists, and 18% of them are spiritual, agnostic, or other. You know, the whole notion that the atheist movement hates religious people is even stupider than the assertion that atheists hate God. Religion is an oppressive force, and it harms religious people a hell of a lot more than atheists. You know, I'm in no danger of foregoing life-saving medicine and opting for prayer. I'm in no danger of being swindled by a preacher. I'm in no danger of being butt-raped by a Catholic priest. Well, no, I guess we're all at some risk of that one, but I'm in a low-risk demographic, at least. But the whole premise of this one is insane. It's like saying that abolitionists were motivated by their hatred of slaves. Of course, this came as part of one of those stupid, how can religion be bad if so-and-so exists arguments, so-and-so being, of course, some morally incorruptible person. And whether the example is Martin Luther King Jr. or the sweet old lady across the street, it's no less stupid an argument. Look, Lucinda and I have a couple of neighbors that are as nice as two people can be, except for the fact that they disowned their son for being gay. And sure, these two people would run into a burning building for us. They'd donate a lung for us. They'd fight off a pack of she-bears for us. But does that make homophobia any less egregious? You know, does the fact that some axe murderer also fed stray cats give you a reason to go easy on axe murdering? And if good religious people mean that religion's good, what the hell do bad religious people mean? But there's more wrong with this argument than its simple failure to sequit. I'll give you a great example in the form of my landlord. The dude is as nice as anyone you can imagine. He's 72 years old, he's spry, intelligent, great sense of humor, and he's quick to hurry over and fix shit that goes wrong, provided it doesn't go wrong on the Lord's Day. He's super religious, but it would be impossible, like physically impossible, to dislike this guy. So the other day I'm talking to him and he brought up his church, which he is often wont to do. He had a bit of a sunburn going. I asked him how he got it, and he said he was mowing the lawn at his church. The 2-acre lawn around his church. This is a 72-year-old man mowing for no compensation. And why, pray tell, is the old man mowing the lawn? Well, the church was concerned with their finances, and they feared that they could no longer afford the monthly landscaper fees, and they figured that Jesus would really appreciate it if somebody volunteered to mow that giant-ass shadeless lawn once a week under the unforgiving South Georgia sun. But it's not like they were taking advantage of him. You know, he understood how important this was, because unless somebody donated their labor to the lawn, they wouldn't be able to send any money to the Southern Baptist Convention. So yes, this church is sending a septuagenarian out to mow their lawn so they can properly fund an anti-gay hate group that was founded on white supremacy and only got around to apologizing for that shit in the mid-90s. How moral of them. So no, I don't hate religious people at any higher rate than I hate non-religious people, and I'd even go so far as to say that I can prove it. See, if I really hated religious people, if I really wanted to stick it to them, I'd stop doing this show, I'd shut up about atheism, and I'd let the church have them.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is Olympic vanadium medalist Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to go for the chromium?
Hey, don't knock vanadium. It has the highest melting point of any period 4 transition metal, so, you know, learn your periodic table.
Take that, titanium.
You did learn your periodic table. Well done, sir. In our lead story tonight, Australian chemist Simon Horsfall is slipping disapproving notes into the package when he sells oral contraception to those customers of his pharmacy that don't share his Catholic beliefs.
What?
In other news, Australian pharmacists mistakenly refer to themselves as chemists. They count pills and collect people's money every week. They have the same skill set as a drug dealer. They're not exactly, like, inventing new plastics for NASA.
Right, I guess it explains why the Australian Space Agency is still lagging so far behind Latvia. It kind of reminds me of those Foster's commercials, though. You remember those ones? Like, you know, they just, like, they would show an uppity fucker eyeing me suspiciously when I buy syringes for my diabetic cat, and it would say, chemist. And then it would show a cheap can of carbonated dingo piss, and it would say, beer. But it's Australian, so the word would be three syllables long, and they'd never quite get to the R.
Here's a statement from the air quote chemist, end air quote, who's been writing self-righteous notes like this for 12 years now. Real quote, it's about integrity. If you say one thing and do something else, that's hypocrisy. We practice what we preach, end real quote.
No, he fucking doesn't.
First of all, practice doesn't have an S, it has a C. Second, he doesn't practice what he preaches at all. He's been making money selling contraceptives for at least 12 years. He's going to hell, and he's talking about integrity and avoiding hypocrisy?
And this is more like a hypocrisy squared at this point. Like, I'm against this, but I'm going to profit off of it, but I'm going to call you an asshole for giving me your money.
I mean, I'm willing to consider the merits on both sides of the abortion issue, but contraception? Wearing a cross around your neck is pretty good contraception. Like, money shots are contraception. It was happening before condoms, just not particularly well.
True.
So, yeah, I mean, like it or not, and whether or not one particular outer suburban pharmacy / Pfizer lab in Australia approves, widespread availability of real contraceptives is one of the greatest public health accomplishments of the last century. So deal with it.
Amen. And I think it's about time we move beyond the orgasms are evil doctrine anyway. So, moving on to God forsakes the flakes who partake in the shaking of snakes news tonight. Kentucky pastor and squamate appetizer Jamie Coots died of stupidity last Saturday after being gnawed on by a venomous rattlesnake. Coots is part of the Darwinian oversight known as snake handlers, a group of Pentecostals who believe that God is the only anti-venom they'll ever need, despite the extraordinarily high rate at which their pastors demonstrate otherwise.
It's literally gotten to the point that if this happens again next week, we'd almost have to skip the story out of boredom. Maybe we just do, like, occasional segments when zero Pentecostal preachers committed suicide by serpent venom that particular week.
Right. Yeah. Snake handling has just been done to death at this point. So Coots was bitten during a Saturday night service, but rather than seek medical attention for the treatable but otherwise mortal wound, he instead opted for the Jesus take the presynaptic neurotoxin approach and treated the bite by laying on his couch and praying, even after EMTs showed up at his home and offered him real universe medicine.
It's a really good thing I'm not an ambulance guy. I would have been making some jokes, something about pastor expiration date, or I would have said something. I would have gotten in trouble that day.
Yeah, your sense of humor might not work well in any emergency medical profession.
No.
Now, if the name Jamie Coote sounds familiar, it's because we discussed this celebrity death pool lock back on episode 27 of this show when National
First
Geographic.
Round.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. First overall. Anyway, he was the guy who was from that, the Nat Geo visual testament to faith-inspired idiocy called Snake Salvation. Yeah. Nat Geo quickly issued an apology and vows to replace the show next season with more responsible programming like Cutting Yourself for Jesus and Rabbi Rosenbaum's Wide World of Long-Distance Circumcisions.
And from the Not in Ken's Ass Anymore file.
Oh, nice.
State House of Representatives in Kansas has overwhelmingly approved Jim Crow laws for gay people. That's right. Proponents of the legislation seem to feel this is a necessary step to facilitate a smooth transition to humanhood for the queers following their recent liberation from slavery in the state. An existing gay resident can be grandfathered in for full humanhood right away. However, he may be required to prove his grandfather was gay.
Which sucks for straight Kansas grandfathers, you know? Imagine that dilemma. Hey, Grandpa, you know, they'll let me use hospitals and pharmacies and everything, but only if you'll go down to the county registrar's office and gobble some cock for me.
Grandfathers are always old, soft. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it's hard to gobble the cock when it's soft, though. So I hear.
Right. Now, should this bill actually be signed into law, which it's like part of the way to having been done, gay couples could legally be denied service absolutely anywhere. And if gays are permitted in buildings at all, I'm pretty sure they're going to be required to use the rear entrance, which is really just an exit for everyone else. So
I knew we were going to get there eventually.
I had to. I guess this must be the anal was just inevitable. I guess this must be the Christian response to the hordes of gay couples in the Bible Belt who were ruining public parks for everyone else with lewd displays of deep-throating water fountain spigots? What?
Shit, yeah, man. The Spite a Bigot, Blow a Spigot campaign. Of course, now, it is worth noting that the leader of the state senate has already come out and said that there's no way in hell they're going to waste the Supreme Court's time by passing this thing. But the fact that Kansas is trying to compete with Russia and Uganda when it comes to legislative gay bashing is still newsworthy, I think. Pass
Indeed.
Or not.
Indeed. And just to be perfectly clear, this would allow, for example, a public hospital to refuse treatment or a police officer to refuse policing, as long as the homophobe in question makes their decision based on a sincerely held religious belief.
Right.
So lucky for anyone in Kansas with the sincerely held belief that hateful assholes should be brutally tortured for even suggesting this, they should soon be able to carry out their vigilante waterboarding spree of religious zealots with full impunity. So that's
good
nice.
Good point. And from the Keystone Caliphate file tonight, a suicide bombing instructor in Iraq shook up this year's Darwin Award standings last week during an accidental pop quiz. While demonstrating how to kill oneself and a score of bystanders, Professor Aggressor the Lesser accidentally killed himself and a score of bystanders.
Well, I mean, that does shake up the Darwin standings. But I'd say the bystanders are at the top of the list on this one. If there's anyone dumber than a suicide bomber conducting a demonstration, it's the people who showed up to that invitation. Probably the sort of meeting you want to Skype in, I'm just saying.
If that's an option, yeah. Now, in addition to the instructor, 21 students were killed, 15 pupils were wounded, 8 militants were arrested, and 1,548 virgins were really disappointed. The instructor's name was not released, but Iraqi officials said he's a well-known terrorist recruiter who was and was all over town and will forever be remembered for his poignant last words, "Whatever you do, never do this."
Yeah, that's why you'd never buy your bomb fuses at the Acme store. That's just recipe for disaster. You're going to go over and check. It's going to blow up. Moving on to sacred Cowboys news. UConn's new assistant football coach, Ernest Jones, has resigned immediately following controversy surrounding his violation of the university policy that says you can't preach about Jesus while you're working. Jones, as well as head coach Bob Diaco, were both hired from Notre Dame, which would be impressive 30 years ago. In 2014, all it tells me is that Manti Te'o's imaginary friend delusions make a lot more sense.
Right, in like an immaculate deception sort of way.
Yeah. Among other useless coaching methods this guy employed, Jones told players that football wouldn't even exist without the Christian Lord and Savior, and that Jesus belongs in every huddle, even though that's obviously a 5-yard penalty.
Right, 12 disciples in the huddle, yeah.
Yeah. So, in honor of the newly resigned, read about to be fired Jones, let's put 30 seconds on the clock. Blip, failed religious sports teams go.
Notre Dame.
Well played, sir. But I was thinking more like, you know, JC Milan, Real Madrid, Oakland Raiders of the Lost Ark, that sort of thing.
Okay, so if we're allowing movies about failed religious sports teams, then I'll go with Rudy.
Well played again. But I'm talking about like the Nashville Sexual Predators, the Dallas Plowboys, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. Sounds like they play in a Catholic league of their own.
I'm not going to a third time say well played. Okay, I like the movie titles. They're offensive. Right up my alley. Let's roll with it. What about Million Dollar Baby Jesus?
Okay, nice. Original Cinderella Man.
Good stuff. Papal Bull Durham.
Parting the Red Sea Biscuit.
It's like fucking a horse. Or, I don't know. Any Given Sunday. That would be Parting the Pink Sea Biscuit. Sorry.
You're
any
right.
Given Sunday School. I'm going to go with Any Given Sunday School.
Oh, okay. All right, nice. How about Bang the Parishioner's Kids Slowly?
Ooh. Damn, you made me cringe again. That is tough. Couple weeks in a row.
Awesome.
Well played. All right. How about, let's get the Amish in there. King of Kingpins.
Oh, nice. Judas Iscariot's of Fire.
Solid. There's a little bit of anti-Semitism in the, sorry. Semi-pro-life? Semi-pro-life?
Like, oh, nice.
You're
nice.
Not
all
sure?
Right, all right.
The people who are on the fence about the abortion issue.
Oh, I got a good one. Raging Bullshit.
Perfect. The Fast Boy Scout.
Or Run, Altar Boy, Run. Either way, the priest is going to end up with Varsity Blue Balls.
Excellent, excellent. All right, you get one more. Bad News Prayers Don't Work. Bad News Prayers Don't Work. Suck it.
Hey, they don't. So I think that's actually as good a point to close on as any we've ever made. So, Heath, thanks as always for joining me.
Sayonara, bitches.
And when we come back, Jay Novella from The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe will be here to skeptically guide us through the universe. Joining us tonight is skeptical star of stage and stream, Jay Novella. Jay is the co-host of my very most favorite podcast in the whole wide world, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. He's also the director of marketing and technology for the New England Skeptical Society. He serves on the board for the Northeast Conference on Science and Skepticism. He's the director of SGU Video Productions, and he's one of the world's leading exporters of flatulence-related humor. Jay, welcome to The Scathing Atheist.
Every single one of those is awesome. Thanks.
Now, before we start, I wanted to express my deepest sympathies here. I'm willing to bet that in 99% of American families, you'd be the smart one.
Thanks.
But like me, you were cursed with a bunch of like ridiculously brilliant siblings here.
It sucks. Yeah, tell me about it. Imagine, you know, you hang out with your friends and, you know, you feel good about all the information you packed into your head, and then your brother Steve comes around and makes you look like a complete moron. I'm very used to it.
My brother started college at 13, and my little sister just got her PhD. Believe me, dude, deepest sympathies. I been there, done that. I just imagine you coming home with your, you know, A on a science test or whatever. Hey, Mom, Dad, you look over, and Steve and Bob are attaching remote control biosynthetic wings to the family dog or whatever you're going.
I got a science award in high school, and when it came in the mail, my dad and my mom laughed because we thought it was an accident. Seriously. So my dad actually called up the superintendent of the school. He's like, no, I found out Jay actually won that, and everyone was shocked.
Nice. So Jay was kind enough to agree to come on tonight to kind of step outside his area of expertise, which, by the way, is dick jokes that incorporate Star Trek references, to talk a little bit about the challenges that face a secular parent. Your son just finished circling everybody else's son for the first time. Congratulations.
Thank you.
As I understand it, if an atheist doesn't eat them in the first 12 months, they probably won't.
That's right. Yeah, we have our rituals as well.
Right, right. You got to watch out for those agnostics. They'll go all the way up to 13, but otherwise you're in the clear. All right, so now I want to explore some of the challenges that you're sure to face raising a rational kid in a credulous world. And to do so, I wanted to do a little a role play, if you will. So you be you, and I'll be your son, Dylan. I've got a few questions here that you might face along the way, and I wanted you to give our listeners an idea how you intend to handle them if and when they come up. Cool?
Okay.
All right, so we're going to start off here because I'm always curious how skeptics deal with this one. Dad, Tommy on the bus said I'm going to go to hell because I'm not baptized. Am I going to go to hell?
Okay, so there's a couple of issues here. One is whether or not you believe in a God, right? So believing in a God versus not following a God, which a lot of people believe that there's a God, but just don't practice.
Right.
You know, that's those two stances are very different. So, you know, I think the discussion would start with something along the lines of, you know, what is God, or what do some people believe that God is? And then, of course, you know, if I'm going to do it right, I have to tell him about a lot of different religions, and they're going to contradict themselves, and I sure as hell will be pointing out those contradictions.
Right.
So feed it right along. You know, I'm going to give him the truth right away and let him. Now I'd ask him questions and I'd say, well, what do you think? Why do you think these different people believe in different gods? And I'm sure that it'll launch into a deep conversation about it. But there's just so much to say at that point. Like, how far do you go? I think I try to keep it as simple as I can, but let him know how amazingly complex it actually is, that there's billions of people on the planet and there's thousands of religions being followed by millions and hundreds of thousands of people, you know. So who's right and who's wrong? And then now we get back to your question of whether or not you're going to go to hell. Well, if you believed in one of these gods, you know, which hell would you go to? I don't think that if God does exist, which I personally, and I'll tell him flat out, I personally don't think that there is a God, but you know, that's really for you to decide, and I will arm him with skepticism and critical thinking to make his own decisions. But if you decide that, even then, I don't think God would send anybody to hell. I can't imagine a God sending someone to hell.
But of course, like, these questions are, you know, obviously you'll have probably talked to him about religion by then, so we're assuming kind of an unrealistic lack of knowledge going in. So with that in mind, I'm going to turn to my next question here. It's, say, 2025 or so, your little dude's 12 years old, and he says, "Hey, Dad! Tony on the bus says that science is for dorks who are kind of suck at football. Is that true?"
Well, first of all, my son will already know the answer to the question because his life is going to be infused with science. At year number two, he's going to be at his birthday. I'm going to have someone come in and bring live animals into the house, you know, like exotic animals, and like just start it right away. I'm already thinking of like the kitchen science that we're going to do together and everything. So I think if somebody said that to him where he's old enough to make that comment, he'll already know the answer. But if he really is worried about that, I would just show him Carl Sagan, Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, a million other people. There's just so many awesome scientists out there that I could turn to, introduce him to. Right? I'm lucky enough to know a lot of these people. So throughout those years, he's going to be coming to conferences and meeting those people. So this question probably won't happen, but if it does, I will just take him back into the kitchen and we'll blow something up.
Awesome. All right, so now let me ask you, this is kind of a tangential question to that, but it seems to me that kids, 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, always love science.
Yep. You know, science and magic, absolutely.
Yeah, and at some point, and it seems to usually be around 12, 13 years old, a lot of the kids just rebel against it. All of a sudden, astronomy is not cool. Do you have any thoughts on where that comes from?
Well, first, I'd like to say that it doesn't always happen that way. It certainly didn't happen that way with me, and most of my friends never really lost that love for science. I think part of it is that kids are just incredibly natural at being curious. They like things that seem to have a mystery built into it, and I also think they like to know how things work. And I think that some people might lose it just as they grow out of that phase. Maybe the love and interest in science could, you know, take a nosedive. But I think a big part of it just is how much are the parents involved in the science education, and, you know, are they keeping that intrigue and that curiosity and all that alive? And a lot of parents just don't care. So it goes away. You know, they're not being exposed to cool things like that. They don't even know that it's out there anymore and that it's cool.
Right.
And the best part and the sad part is as they get older and they get the more intellectual versions of them could really appreciate it because it's cool as a kid, but it's fucking epic as an adult because you really, you know, the mind blowing shit could start to make sense.
Right. Yeah. You have to have that base of knowledge before you get to the really cool stuff.
Yeah, or at least the interest, you know, to as an adult to explore the deeper questions and answers and all the, you know, just the stuff that you and I swim in now that is fascinating to us.
Yeah. All right, so I'll tell you what, we're going to end on a kind of a serious or at least a more serious question. So now let's say Dylan's about 15 or so. This is 2027, so I guess you guys would be getting your like intercellular nanobots upgraded or whatever, he says.
I hope.
Yeah, me too. He says, Hey, Pops, Tori on the bus says I can't finger her unless I join her church, so can I get saved?
Well, first, most importantly, let me show you how to finger a woman. let's talk about it. Because if you're going to go there, you got to go in with some type of information in your head. So, yeah, after that conversation happened, and God, I have no idea where it's going to go. I'll just wait for that one to happen. All right, so if my son wants to join a church, I don't think – I mean, what am I going to do, like throw myself in front of a bus? Like, I think at that point I would have given him enough information and enough critical thinking that I wouldn't feel threatened by it. So sure, of course, like it's your ultimately your decision. I mean, it's not going to be like you can't do that till you're 18 in my house. Like if he really wanted to do something like that, I'm not going to stop him, and I'm not going to be that type of parent that's going to, you know, be like, no, absolutely not, and you're not allowed in my house anymore. I think that's ridiculous. I think, you know, not making it a big bad thing kind of takes some of the charm out of some of those decisions as well. Like, sure, go ahead. You want to do that? Go right ahead. Like, it really is your decision, but like, let's have a discussion about like, why do you want to do it? What do you think it means? What do you think it is? So that's a hard one, you know, because something is happening that you don't like, but
right,
that's going to happen, right? I mean, look at what you did. Look at what I did as kids, right? I mean, we made a lot of really bad decisions that ended up going nowhere. They were just decisions that came and went. So sure, make a mistake. Go right ahead. I'll be here when you're over it.
Now, I have to say that says a lot about the skeptical worldview that virtually every skeptical parent that I talk to says, I'm going to give my child as much information as possible and let them make their own decision. That's not what we tend to hear from the fundamentalists.
Not at all. No, Noah, I mean, the point is I don't have an ulterior motive. You know, I'm not trying to fool my kid into anything. I'm trying to give him a baloney detector and a toolkit, an emotional and intellectual toolkit. So it's more of like mental tools as opposed to walls and, you know, restrictions.
All right. Well, I tell you what, man, I really appreciate you doing such an unconventional interview with me here.
Anytime. I love it. I love talking about my son, so I'll do this whenever you want.
Awesome. And of course, if you want to hear more from Jay, you can check out The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe every Saturday. Check out their YouTube channel. You can see some of Jay's directorial handiwork. And it's not too late to get Nexus tickets and see him in person this April. You'll find links to all three of those on the show notes for this episode. Jay, thanks again.
My pleasure. I loved it.
Before we dismiss the Royal Guard tonight, I wanted to make everybody aware of a very cool fundraiser that our friends at Secular.fm are putting together. They're doing a 24-hour live broadcast to raise money for the Foundation Beyond Belief. It's running all day this Sunday, the 23rd of February, starting and ending at midnight. Tanner Campbell, Mark Nebo, and David Viviano are hosting the thing, and they've got a list of guests that makes me drool. Partial list here. Dale McGowan, Seth Andrews, Shelley Segal, JT Eberhard, DJ Grothy, Jessica Alquist, Jerry DeWitt, Dave Moscato, and I'm seriously just scratching the surface of their guest list. I strongly encourage you to check it out. It should be a lot of fun, and it's for a really good cause. You'll find more information on the show notes for this episode. I also wanted to apologize for the Two Chronicles poem getting bumped again, but we needed the time for the interview. I promise it'll be on next week's show. And of course, I need to give Jay another big thanks for coming on the show. Very awesome guy, super passionate about what he does, and he's one of the real pioneers of podcasting, so thrilled to have him on. Also need to thank Heath for his indefatigable sense of humor. I need to thank Lucinda for opening the show up tonight, and I need to thank Matt from Chicago for his awesome Farnsworth quote / cafe press plug / rape joke. But most of all, of course, I need to thank this week's most prestigious paragons of personhood: Thomas, Tim, Brad, Tyler, Kenny, Shelby, Vinny, Jeff, April, Leo, Wayne, Liam, Richard, and Tom. Thomas and Tim, whose reflexes and strength are so great they could be empowered by a radioactive spider and not even notice. Brad and Tyler, whose levers are plenty long enough for Archimedes if we could just find that fulcrum. Kenny and Shelby, the wonder twins of atheism, except that neither of them has a power that sucks compared to the other one. Vinny and Jeff, who are hot enough to melt Vanadium, April and Leo, who are so awesome they named a month and a sign of the zodiac after them, Wayne and Liam, whose attractiveness holds the key to zero-point energy, and Richard and Tom, who have to turn away more pussy than a Friskies audition. These 14 upright, upstanding, uproarious, uplifting individuals have proved their upness this week by giving us money. Only the most atheistic of all atheists have the atheism it takes to give us money, but if you think you disbelieve in God enough, you'll find the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And remember, size matters. Help us grow our social media presence by liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter, subscribing to us on YouTube, and circling us on whatever the Google one is. And rate us on iTunes, and favorite us on Stitcher, and subscribe to our blog, and Jesus, am I needy. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. As a testament to what a good take this is going to be, I'm going to not fuck up the opening line 6 times in a row.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.